And now it's time for America's favorite daytime fun show.
Block to Block Radio here on 91.5 FM, KKUP, Cupertino.
We got a very special guest in the house, Kathleen Krunick. And she's with Next Door Solutions for Domestic Violence. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
We're doing good. And also on the casa, like always, Chris Dahl. Oh, man. How are you doing, brother?
Good. I'm ready to get started.
All right. Well, introduce yourself. Let folks know a little bit about yourself and your organization.
Okay. First of all, thank you very much for inviting me. I've been with Next Door Solutions to Domestic Violence for 10 years now. I've been working in the field of domestic violence, anti-violence movement for the past 26 years. And our agency is a very comprehensive standalone, meaning that we're not part of another larger organization. All we do is domestic violence work. Wow. And we've been around for 40 years, the organization. It's the oldest and largest in the community in the South Bay area. We have a shelter for folks who are battered and their children. We have transitional living into apartment complexes. We have a very large community office that's just around the corner. We provide legal assistance in helping to fill out restraining orders, immigration. Not a lot of people know that if you are brought here by your partner because your partner has a visa to work, that you're pretty much invisible to the government, to ICE. And so if you're being beaten up and you want to leave the relationship, you have to leave the country. You're deported.
Wow.
If your children are born on American soil, you have to leave the children here. So those choices are untenable.
Wow.
And we provide a service where under the immigration law, if you've been battered, you can appeal and you can petition ICE for your own residency status. And so we work with that, and we have pro bono attorneys, seven law firms that work with us pro bono. So the victim can get assistance from us, wraparound services, and can also get the petition filed by an attorney and carried by the attorney. So it's a wonderful program that we offer.
Oh, wow.
I like to let people know, because we have so many immigrants. There is, if you're involved with an undocumented person, you can also get help. There's a provision within the ICE law as well for that, and most people don't know about that. Mm-hmm. So we have children's services. We have a great teen program. We serve about 8,000 people a year, and we take about 15,000 crisis calls a year. So we're very high volume.
Wow. And, you know, I just want to thank you for the work that you do, and I really view that it's important. Now, we've been talking about domestic violence the last couple of weeks now, and I want to know what kind of mental health services, say your organization provides. And I know a lot of these women, and you guys focus on the women.
Yes.
What are some of the issues that these women are coming with when they come into your doors?
There are about as many different types of battered women as there are women. So they come in with a wide variety of circumstances. Our shelter deals mostly with women who are living in poverty and have no other resources. So when they're being hurt, they come call our hotline and they come to our shelter. They come with their children and often nothing but the clothes on their back. They've run out of the house late at night and they have nothing. So we start from scratch. Although there are some women with mental health issues, diagnosable mental health issues, the majority of women don't. They come with emotional scars, but they're not coming with mental health issues per se. So we help them assess where they are emotionally, but we also do what we call a risk assessment and safety plan. Because although you think, well, the person has reached out for health, that's it, actually the most dangerous time for a woman who's being battered is the time that she leaves the relationship. We've had 9 murders and two suicides in the past 8 months that are domestic violence related. So it's almost as high as gang. I mean, but we're not talking about it in our community. So we work a lot on what are the risks involved, where is she now, where is he, what's going on, is she being stalked, what happened when she left before, does he hurt pets, does he hurt relatives, does he threaten relatives. Mm-hmm. So we work with that. And then if there are mental health issues, we refer. We have 14 support groups, which is immensely helpful because it helps women realize they're not alone, that what they're going through is not isolated, and they learn from each other, which is a real a woman-to-woman, a grassroots type of way to deal with this. And we have a support group in the jail, and we have a support group in Palo Alto, and we have a support group in Los Gatos, and everything in between. We have it in three languages, So that's how we help women deal with the emotional scars, and also rebonding with other women and rebonding with her children, because the relationship between mom and kids is fractured.
Oh, wow. Is there a rise in domestic violence? Is it steady pace of over the years, or do you see a rise, a spike in that because of economic issues or maybe other social issues that may be going on?
It's a really good question. Domestic violence tends to be high regardless of the economic situation, but when things are so bad and there's that much tension and stress in the home, and if the partner is unemployed, the partner may be home more. Mm. So the opportunity is greater for violence to take place. I don't know of any research, but my experience tells me that women tend to stay in relationships during bad economic times because the world is so unpredictable. So it's kind of sad that it may be on the rise within her home, but the options are fewer because she just can't see what the world has to offer without, and none of us do. I mean, it's a really crazy time, right? I mean, there's no predictability. Wall Street's up, it's down. You know, we're being used. It feels down into the home as well.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I want to take this time right now. If you could drop a telephone number or any information, maybe someone out there is listening right now. You know, maybe it's not you. Maybe it's a friend of yours. Maybe it's someone out there that you know that may be going through some issues right now. And how easy is it to just call? Maybe folks ain't ready to leave the situation, but they want to talk to somebody. How can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, I will say that some women never leave, and that's okay. It's not up to us to tell women whether they should leave relationships or stay in them. All of our services are free, and they can call our hotline anytime, 24 hours, 7 days a week. It's live voice. We have different languages to offer when you call, and it's 408-279-2962. You don't have to give your name if you don't want to. You don't have to answer any questions you don't want to. You can remain anonymous. If you want to come in or want to find out, we have lots of women who just call every week to check in and say, I'm okay, and can you talk to me for a while? And then we have others who, that's how they start their journey, is by making that first phone call, and it's slow. For other women, it's, you know, he said he'd never do this again, and he did it, and now I need, now I need to get out.
Well, you bring up a good point there about, I studied the cycle of domestic violence while I was in law school, and they talked about how a man or a woman will abuse the other partner, then be apologetic, and then for a minute kind of just step away from the situation. Mm. Then it goes back again to the cycle where he's abusive again, then he stops abusing and just keeps going and going. So I guess in an abusive relationship where one partner is abusing the other person, does it ever get better? I mean, are there situations where things change, or does it only get better once the relationship is terminated?
Yeah, that's another good question. Let me first address the cycle of violence. I think that cycle was developed in the 70s, and it's really something, you know, we know so much more, not enough, but we know more than we've ever known before. And what domestic violence is about, for many, it doesn't follow the cycle pattern. For some, it does. But it's really about coercive control. It is about what's happening when the physical stuff isn't. Mm. The trauma that's experienced is more apparent and more felt because of the coercive control, not the physical, although the physical is bad. So what I mean is the you have to show all of your receipts to make sure that the time on there fits the time that he wants you to have gone to the grocery store. So if he thinks it should have been 15 minutes and it's 20 minutes, you're in trouble.
The control issues.
He wants you to wear certain clothes. He wants you to go certain places. He doesn't want you to talk to your family. You become very isolated without friends. He uses the children. So there's all of that that's going on all the time, although it's not all negative. There's reward, punishment, and often that's random. Mm-hmm. And so it's not unlike prisoners of war. They've done studies, parallel studies, and found that the characteristics are similar and the reactions are similar. So it's much more complex than the cycle affords. So it was a first tool, but it really isn't a tool that's used much anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who where it gets better because there are varying degrees of domestic violence. Not all domestic violence fits that higher level coercive control. There are some relationships where it's really dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. I slap her, she slaps me. Shouldn't happen in a relationship, mm-hmm. but it does. And that's really a more dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah.
That, I think, can be healed more than the one where there's coercive control.
Mm. Yeah.
For me, the cutting edge difference between domestic violence and a dysfunctional relationship is fear.
Mm.
If you are afraid of that person, and it's not always that you're afraid that they're going to hurt you physically, but you know something bad is going to happen.
Mm.
You know it when he slams the door of the car, when he comes in the house, you know something bad is going to happen. He kicks a garbage can, or he starts to yell at you. You know something bad, and it's not anger inside of you, it's fear.
Right.
That's what makes domestic violence. Those have less of a chance of healing because it is about the way your partner views his partner in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a sense of ownership, and it's kind of part of him. It is a right that he has because he has the right to discipline his partner.
Wow.
So.
Well, in terms of this, I guess, how does a person become this way from the studies that you've seen? Is it based on what he saw his dad controlling his mom or how society is? I mean, how did he become this way or how does she become this way?
The reason I look at it as a gender-based issue, and much of the research looks at it that way, although we do know that there are men who are battered, and studies say 3 to 5%. When I mean battered, I mean the whole coercive control, the physical, the sexual. Sexual abuse is very much a part of a violent relationship because you control a person by taking their spirit, and you take their spirit through sexual assault and sexual battery, or making somebody do something they're not comfortable doing. So those things tend not to be female on male. Those things tend to be male on female. But there are men who get abused.
Mm-hmm.
The answer to that question is, first of all, we have a society that doesn't value women. I'm doing a presentation tomorrow, and it's about our teen program, which is about changing social norms, right? So violence is a means to an end. I mean, that's why we have, when you have the racism, the white structure, the power structure, it's taking something from somebody else, right? It's not just because I don't like you because you're colored. Deep down, it's because I want something you have, or I want the power, I want to maintain the power I have. And it's like that with domestic violence. It's, I have a certain amount of power because I am who I am. I'm privileged just because I was born X. Therefore, I can do what I want to do. So there is a social norm that's under all of this. So in this presentation I'm making, I went to YouTube and I started looking at videos that kids are watching.
Oh, Lord.
And I went to Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, there it is.
And in Grand Theft Auto, in the first week of introducing Grand Theft Auto 4, $500 million was made. Revenue generated, and they sold over 1 million games that week. And the game is primarily, how do you kill the prostitute? It was so extremely graphic, and it's over and over and over again. Now, I'm not going to say that everybody who watches those games over and over again is going to go out and do that, but it does implant a message about your relationship with the other gender. Then I went to the Rihanna Eminem video about I Love the Way You Lie, and it's about he's beating her up, and he sets the house on fire with her in it. And she's tied to the bed. And he's singing this song, and it's highly stylized. And then they show them having sex, and so you get this message of sex and violence. So we have this, it's in the ether, right? Then you have people who have been raised, about 60% of the men who batter have been raised in homes where they watched violence. So what I'm curious about is the 40% who haven't been raised in it, and so that's where the in the ether comes out. And the other thing is, you may have five boys in the home, and they may have all watched it, but not all five boys go on to batter. So we don't know what that's about yet. So it's a combination. It's it is intergenerational, but it's also social in how we view each other and the genders, and that's where I think social justice takes place.
And I would even say that, you know, going back to the culture, it's more intense now than years before. You got the YouTube, you got the Facebook, you got children, kids on these websites. And for years now, I've been working with young people, mainly in the elementary school age. And one of the things that I've noticed over the past, I would say, 5-6 years, it has gotten worse with the video games, with the music. It's just terrible. And one of the things that alarmed me the most, I would hear, I'm talking 4th, 5th grade youth, calling the little girls the B word. And I don't know what alarmed me more, the fact that these young boys were calling the girls these names, or the fact that the girls accepted being called those names.
When I went on this site for Grand Theft Auto, all they asked me on the site was my age, right? So any kid, anybody can go on, and you're viewing all of this. And you're right, not only, you know, in the day, we would watch it once. So even if it was a bad movie, you watched it once. These kids are playing this game over and over.
And they're in the game. They're not just watching. They're doing acts.
They're doing
the
acts.
That's the difference.
And what I noticed about Grand Theft Auto, and I don't want to just pick on that game, but that's the one I happen to go to.
And there's a lot of likewise games, too. That's not the only one.
It's not the only one. But the more violent you are, the higher your score. So you want to be more violent because that, and I wonder about the desensitization. And the thing about girls is, it's kind of like with my friends of color. We talk about internalized sexism and internalized racism. And the way I look at that is, we all drink the same Kool-Aid, right? So girls believe that. We believe that stuff about ourselves, just like boys believe it. Because we're watching the same stuff. We're doing the same stuff. So, you know, it's internalized in us as well, as is often racism and feeling less than involved for people of color to have that deep, because it comes up when you're tiny. So it is very sad to watch girls, but I, you know, I think, well, hell yeah, we drank the same Kool-Aid. Why wouldn't we?
When I counseled women before on domestic violence, I saw some of the issues were that some women liked the bad boy. And even when they were in an abusive relationship, they went on to the next abusive relationship. So it was like a cycle they couldn't break away from. Like they went to one relationship and ended violently. Then they stepped into the next person. It's like they're attracting a certain type of person.
They say they want a nice guy, but when they get a nice guy, they walk all over them.
Exactly.
But you know, what's interesting to me is that we spend a lot of time on, why does the woman stay? Why does she go into those relationships? I would love it, and just to maybe leave it here, if we could come as a society to a place where the first question we ask is, why does our society allow somebody to do that to somebody else that they say they love? Because if she's getting into multiple relationships, it's like being raped multiple times. It isn't, I don't look for it. If it, yes, there. I agree with you. There are, I mean, I grew up in a terribly dysfunctional home, and I had very dysfunctional relationships early on because that's what I knew. But that's not domestic violence, okay? But if you're meeting perpetrator after perpetrator, my response is, my God, we've got that many perpetrators in the world that I might meet a second, third, and fourth one. That's like if you think a woman's greatest fear is being raped, right? So if I get raped once, does that mean I'm done with it? No, I could be raped multiple times. I could be molested multiple times in my life. We have to look at not the person who's being molested or violated. Let's look at the person who's perpetrating it and say, men, we need to work with men. We need to help you heal as a man. We need to have one of the things that a male friend of mine said, you know, I want to start a group, and he's Latino, and in one of the Latino communities, he said, I want to start a support group for men where healthy men are with not healthy men.
There it is.
And they talk.
That's the beginning.
And they talk, not the criminal justice system,
yes,
not any
exactly.
of that. So my call to you is, let's start having those conversations and say it doesn't matter what the buttons are. It does. You turn away and you walk away, but you don't beat on the person and you don't coerce them and you don't control them. That ain't the way to get love.
Oh, Lord. Kathleen,
no,
right there. We could go on for hours, but I'll tell you what, we're going to end it right here. Kathleen Krunick, I want to thank you for coming down today. Next Door Solutions for Domestic Violence.
And if you're somebody who is doing the battering, give us a call because we know what the resources are and we don't judge people. We want to see you get help so you have intimacy in your relationship as well, because you can't have intimacy when you have fear.
All right. And I want to thank you once again for coming down. Is there anything?
It's been great talking to you. I enjoyed talking to you over the phone last week. And thanks for coming on the show. You guys are down the street from us.
Yes,
it's walking distance.
Office, yes.
I see your office all the way every Wednesday when I'm
all
passing by all the way through here. So it's great convenience.
Yeah.
But I hope to have you again on the show in the future.
Thank you. Again, thank you for thinking about this issue.
Yeah.
All right. And you still got a lock right here on 91.5 FM, KKUP Cupertino. Don't touch that dial because we ain't.